This is Speaking of Faith, First Person. This online exclusive is part of Repossessing Virtue, an ongoing series in which we search for fresh ways to think and talk about the current economic crisis. I'm Trent Gillis, the online editor and producer for the program. Here I speak with Juana Marion, an aspiring filmmaker living in Los Angeles, California. She responded to our questions about the moral and spiritual aspects of the economic downturn with this story, which we asked her to tell in her own words.
I'm a Romanian-born American citizen. I've been in the U.S. since I was 8 years old. I was raised by a single mother who was 45 when she and I emigrated to the United States. My mother struggled not only to make ends meet in a language she hardly spoke initially, but also to live a bigger story, that is, to practice as a licensed pharmacist as she had for 23 years in Romania. I attended a small, private, all-girls high school in Connecticut, received a B.A. in English from Yale and a master's in poetry from Johns Hopkins. So I could say I've lived something like the American dream, my mother even more so, the genuine American dream. My mom often tells people that we're an American success story. And yet my college years, and particularly the year I spent in graduate school, were marked by a lot of anxiety and intermittent bouts with depression. And this might not be unusual, one might say. The 20s are years of confusion, self-doubt, and self-discovery. So I took leaves of absence, I traveled abroad, I came back, but a critical unease with my life in the U.S. continued to mount until sometime around 2003. I felt that if I didn't leave the country, I would face some kind of irrevocable death of the soul. There was no logical explanation for my return to Romania, the country both of my parents had fought hard to leave not long before the fall of communism. But I felt if I didn't leave, find some alternate path to the one I was on, I would literally die. This is the kind of stuff that spiritual crises are made of extensive self-evaluation, but most importantly, intuitive action towards some possibility of living life well, or at least better than I had been to that point. I didn't understand at that time what was driving me away and what I thought I'd find in Romania, though in retrospect, I see an obvious search for a different kind of independence, which I found in the pursuit of creative engagement with filmmaking. For me, it was a good backdrop because it was both familiar and unfamiliar at the same time, allowing for a unique exploration of who I was and from where I'd come. And now to bring things to the present. I live in Los Angeles, where I work in the film industry, an industry defined by uncertainty, risk, dreams, and largely egotistical ambitions. For the non-union filmmaker, there is no health insurance. Paid work comes unexpectedly or not at all. Rewarding work is sporadic, but great communities are possible as a result. I've worked for and with people I greatly admire. There's a tenuous sense of meaning in all this, and I can honestly say that during the past 5 years, I've had the fullest, most enriching experience of my life, though I was broke or badly bent the majority of the time. I'm no stranger to the uncertainty that is gripping so many people right now, and I say this with neither self-pity nor self-righteousness, because I know I only have myself to look after, and I've chosen this way of life. I'm sorry for people who are finding themselves entirely unprepared for this painful but necessary period of adjustment. I'm looking for ways to apply my own experiences in an effort to help. It's an exciting time to be alive, almost overwhelmingly exciting.
One of the things you wrote, you told a story about a teacher, and I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about that. Maybe we could, I could follow up with that.
Oh, sure. My teacher from when I was in second grade?
Yeah.
Okay. So the first teacher that I had once we moved to the United States, I came in the middle of the school year, so it was January. And I remember exactly, actually, I came in the middle of a spelling test, and I knew what was going on, but I didn't know how to spell. So I remember I had to cheat on the spelling test. But she was, I found out later that they always chose her to get the most difficult students. So this
they
teacher,
being
the school. Principal. Whenever a student who was going to present some kind of a challenge came in, somehow Mary McKee always got that student. And so with me, it was mostly that I didn't speak English. But she somehow, and I can't remember exactly how this happened, she started sending notes home with me to my mother. And so she built this relationship with my mother. And then when my parents were going through a tough time and they were divorced, and my mother and I had to move to a different place. And so Mary found us an apartment, and she paid for, I think, for the first couple of months' rent, and she had a key to the place. So whenever she would come by whenever we weren't home, and she would check the fridge and see if there was something that we needed, and we'd come home and there would be things we needed in the fridge. Or for a few years, I would come home in September and find new clothes for school on my bed. One Christmas, she somehow figured out some way of getting us out of the house, and we came home and there was a decorated tree. And but the most poignant part of that story is that my mom was sort of overwhelmed with a feeling of indebtedness, and Mary wrote my mother this note once that said, "Please don't ever say again how I don't know how I'm ever going to be able to repay you." She said, "What else makes sense in this crazy world if we're not helping each other?" So she's just kind of a genuine angel, and we're still friends with her. We have Christmas and Thanksgiving with her family every year.
With that experience at such a young age, what's that mean to you now? As you're an adult and you know you're kind of navigating the work world, and it sounds like a sense of community was created for you in a foreign land at a young age, and for your mother.
I think what that means for me now is that I've moved around a lot in the last few years, but wherever I've gone, I've tended to seek that. You know, for example, in Los Angeles, I've found, while I was in Italy, I met this chef who lives in Los Angeles. And when I came back to LA a year and a half ago, I started working for her as her personal assistant and also working at her restaurant. And it may not seem like a very big deal to other people, but for me, working at that restaurant is like having a family in Los Angeles. And I didn't really feel like I lived here until I started working there. Like, I didn't feel like I had a place where I belonged. So I think that experience it obviously made me appreciate that exists, but it also really made me seek it out and made it seem a necessity to me that wherever I go, I need to find that kind of experience. Mm-hmm.
You're working in L.A. You're an aspiring filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know,
I have to say that with a little more confidence. Yes.
It's a very grounded response.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I have friends that aspire in similar ways, and a lot of times when they talk about getting a job in a restaurant or something like that, it's a temporary means, and they don't look to that as a source of sustenance. But you don't seem to approach it that same way.
To be honest, I really, and this, I'm not just speaking metaphorically, for me it's like a soulful sustenance. It's not, there's something about just knowing that you have a paycheck, no matter how small it is, but it's not what's sustaining me financially.
Right.
You know, so in some ways it sets my mind at ease on a like a very symbolic level, but at the same time, I tend to kind of seclude myself, and especially when I'm not really, I'm not on a specific project, I don't know what I'm doing. So this job not only gets me out among people, like these wonderful people who have been working at the restaurant for like, 11 years, it's unheard of. Mm. So it's some kind of nourishment that's really important to me.
I mean, do you consider this the economic downturn as a moral or spiritual crisis?
I guess why I felt compelled to write was that I do consider it a moral and spiritual crisis, but in some ways I feel as if what's going on in the world around me is somehow now matching the way that I have been living my life for my entire adult life. So it's hard for me to say that I'm living any differently. There's some comfort to knowing that more people are asking the same questions that I've been asking all of these last years, because I've been living in kind of an insecure world of my own. I mean, I don't think I'm in any way unique in this. I think anybody who's trying to make art or who's trying to live anything but what would be considered a a normal life.
So, well, as you, maybe I can approach it from this way. You said you don't think you're doing anything differently. Are your conversations different, different depths, different orientations with fellow auteurs or poets, artists, that type of stuff?
Yeah, I think that there's more, it's almost like there's a legitimizing context. I don't know how else
say
to say
more.
That. Well, the anxiety that I had when I was in college and then in graduate school, like if there was somehow a sneaking suspicion all this while that something was terribly wrong, but everybody else seemed to be getting along fine, and you're kind of wondering why you can't get along, like why can't you succeed in a way that satisfies the norm, or why your standard of the quality of life isn't the same as anybody, and all this while you have this suspicion that something isn't quite right. But you don't have you don't really feel like you can validate or articulate that sense of what's going on in the world. And suddenly the cracks start to show, you know, in some ways you feel like, oh, okay, I haven't been crazy this whole time.
What I've been fascinated with, one of the voices that we included in our, the Wise Voices show for Repossessing Virtue was Anchi Min, novelist, a Chinese American novelist.
Mm-hmm.
Who grew up during the Cultural Revolution. And, and she took a tact that was a little tougher on Americans, basically calling them out as being a little soft and saying, you know, you've still got a lot of opportunity here, whether it's a library. You don't have to worry about, you know, where you're going to sleep, things like that for the most part. So,
you know, there was something that I identified with in what she said. I think that I do that in sort of micro ways in Los Angeles, is that there's, you know, for example, maybe it's a silly example, but this overwhelming idea in Los Angeles that you can't get around without driving. Well, you can get around with, there's a subway that most people who live here don't know about. There's public transportation. So I think that already, like, even before the cracks started showing, To try to live in a simpler way, even in a complicated environment, I think that this feeling that a lot of people have that there's no, that suddenly, like, everything is going to fall apart and there's nothing we can do. And they're very simple solutions. I'm trying to think of what specifically I remember, because I actually remember thinking she was a little too tough. But
I'll just ask you more directly. Your Romanian heritage, does that help you think differently about everything that's going on than you think maybe somebody was natively born in America?
I think that, you know, anytime that you have an awareness of how people live in a different place, I think it can help you. I actually went back and lived there as an adult. So
yeah.
I went back for 2 years, and to be honest, I think part of it was that I knew that there were people my age that I'd grown up with when I was a kid who were living in Romania, and somehow I had this feeling all the time that I'd grown up really sheltered, and because I grew up here, and that, you know,
sheltered in that you weren't worldly or
or coddled in a way, even though I wasn't. We didn't really have a lot of money. Like anywhere schools I went to, I was on scholarship and financial aid. And so it wasn't like I was, you know, I wasn't living a life of luxury, but I just felt like I knew that people my age had to work a lot harder for things in Romania. And so I'd gone back a couple times before, and it just felt like a real draw to that place and wanted to spend a longer period of time. But part of my idea was that I thought it would toughen me up in a way. But I thought if I could figure out how to live there, especially because I went to a city that I didn't know. I hadn't spent any time in Bucharest when I was a kid. I had grown up in Transylvania. So I thought if I can make it on my own in Bucharest, then I could probably do anything. So.
And is that when you, I think you spoke of it, you left because of an irrevocable death of the soul?
That was when I was, yeah, that was when I was at,
yeah.
Well, I mean, that was the height of being coddled. I was at Johns Hopkins in a poetry writing program. Mm. So that just felt like, you know, A, if you were any kind of real poet, you didn't need to be in school. Mm. And then, you know, it just felt like things were too easy for us in some ways.
You needed to really test yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, that was part of it.
Well, go ahead. Did you have something else there?
Well, and I also think that one of the things that I was getting away from here was, I think that if the structures that you're living in are so rigid that you really can only maneuver if you're living kind of a formulated life. Whereas, like, if you go to a place like Romania, you know, where things aren't rigid, and there's all kind of, you know, there are bad sides to that, of course. There's all kinds of corruption and you know, bureaucracy and all this stuff. But I think that when in a place where your ability to succeed or to produce a work of art or anything depends a lot more on your relationships with people than with just, you know, what degrees you have and how you get, you know, applying for jobs over the internet and that kind of thing. Like, it really, you really have to make it on your own while talking to people and while having to sort of, you know, either prove yourself, but not in a standardized way. I think that was the experience that I was looking for there. And I think that that's what's happening more now here, is that as things are kind of, the structures that we trusted and that were the foundations of how we, you know, how we maneuvered our lives, as these are kind of falling apart, I think in some ways I'm hoping that one of the results of that is that people will realize the value of, like, human relationships and what it can mean to be in Los Angeles and work at a restaurant like Angeli, and that it's not about the money, and that you have this community of people who will stand behind you and will be there and will come to your screening when you have your first movie out.
Well, my final question.
Okay.
So as this crisis goes on, what kind of wisdom or leadership are you looking for? Are there certain people, figures, or certain media outlets? What are you looking to kind of to inform how you think about things and live?
Well, besides the obvious thing, which is that I feel so grateful to have found this radio show. I think it's people like Evan Kleiman, my boss, this is what seems really necessary to me right now, is finding people who have a real ability to build community. And Evan definitely does that. I actually spent 10 days in a meditation retreat 3 weeks ago. And so I think that I'm looking to other people, but I think that I'm using the flexibility that comes with, you know, things not totally working out already all the time. So I'm using that to explore myself as well. And I'm, you know, I'm going to be driving across country in a month. And
what are you just, to see the country? Is it a straight point A to point B?
Well, no. I'm shooting a wedding in Missouri, so I decided I was going to drive. But I'm going to take my time doing it. And I was thinking about the Dorothea Lange story of when she was driving from California back home. I can't remember where back home was for her, but she had left some job that she was done with in California and was looking for work. And on the way, there was a sign for a job for pea pickers, and she passed by. She said, "No, I need to go home." And about 20 miles down the road, she turned around, and the first person that she met was the woman in the photograph of the migrant workers. So it seems like the right time to do it.
Right.
I think it would be a sort of good perspective on what's going on in the rest of the country. So I'm going to take my time. I think part of me must feel like you're not really an American until you've driven across country.
That's right.
That was Juana Marion. She's an aspiring filmmaker living in Los Angeles, California. This is Repossessing Virtue, speaking of FACE's continuing exploration of the economic crisis. For more, subscribe to the SOF podcast and visit speakingoffaith.org.